The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a good Wednesday, Cleveland. No Andres Jimenez left. Browns taking on the Kansas City Chiefs in a few days. And here we are, moving along. Jake Volmick with you guys here on Overtime on 92.3 The Fan. Me and Spencer talked yesterday a decent amount about the Jimenez trade. Obviously, it went live like 6 o'clock, a little bit after that. It was basically right down the stretch. He got the news about Andres Jimenez. And I think everybody's initial reaction was sort of the up in arms. The Guardians are essentially making a move to take a salary hit and then bring the money down a little bit. The thing that they always do. It's everybody's initial reaction is Andres Jimenez is a guy that you paid. You know he's due a lot of money. The Guardians moved off of him and now they don't have to pay. Seems like another move for the Guardians essentially to save, and that's about it. It felt like I wanted to go there initially, and I brought it up with Spencer yesterday, just sort of the idea that, okay, yes, this is sort of a deal to save them money. But at the same time, everybody wanted to go completely wild over the idea that this is a terrible trade, and the Guardians are just selling once again, and this is what they do. I think we overreacted. I brought up the fact, Andres is a guy that you look at. Yes, you paid him and you wanted him to be a cornerstone. At the end of the day, it's just not what he was. Andres Jimenez was not going to be a cornerstone in the organization. In fact, he was going to be a terrible contract, as Daryl told us yesterday. He was going to be the worst contract on the books within a couple of years. I think we want to latch on to this idea that Andres was, yes, a star defensive player, a gold glover. I just don't know that that's enough in today's major leagues, right? Like, in the MLB today, that is just not enough. You can't just be good defensively in a position, by the way, where most guys defensively, it just doesn't matter. Second base is a spot. Yes, he saved a lot of runs. He had a great war. He's a good second baseman, but you essentially put guys at second because most of the time, those are like your failed shortstops, essentially. And that's honestly what Andres pretty much was. It was, well, we don't have room for you because we're putting Amed Rosario at shortstop. Let's move you over to second. And he flourished. But let's be realistic about it. Like, that's the only thing you were latching onto with Andres Jimenez. He was a good defender. He did not bring it at the plate. 2022 was a great year, and then you look at the 2 years that followed it, he hit 250. The guy sat there and hit 250. That simply does not cut it. You can't hit 250 and be a major piece getting paid on a $100 million contract in the MLB these days. Not playing second base. We knew that he didn't want to move over to shortstop. He had taken away essentially every avenue that he could have to make his deal worth it and to make him worth it as a player. So when you explode about it, I think it's honestly just a reaction to reaction, right? There's a lot of things in the offseason that make you upset about the Guardians, and you're just living in the fear that they're going to do the same thing over and over and over again. Again, they saved money. I don't think you've necessarily got that much worse here off of Andres Jimenez leaving. You might downgrade a little bit defensively. Almost anybody you bring in to hit every day in the major leagues that you're going to trust to start at second base is going to hit near that mark. 250 is like a bare minimum to stay in the major leagues. If you're not hitting for power and you're not one of these giant power bats, yeah, you have to be at 250, and that's a bottom line. Offensive production will increase with Andres Jimenez off the roster. Defensive production probably will go down. I just think you look at this, and I think you should be happy at the end of the day for the trade. Whether or not the Guardians are going to reallocate the money and actually pony up and try to deal another contract is yet to be seen. I wouldn't hold my breath over it. But how much worse are the Guardians really getting off of this move? The writing was on the wall the whole time. You drafted a second baseman first overall. There are more glaring needs on this team than getting rid of Andrés Giménez. Right? Like, I'll tell you, the contract was bad. It definitely was not the area you looked at for the Guardians and said, whoa, this just has to be fixed. It was borderline puzzling that they go and get the guy because you looked at the middle infield and you said, okay, the only way that this makes sense is essentially if Andrés moves to shortstop or if you move off of him. You immediately had to think that as the draft pick went down with Travis Bazzano. He is a solidified second baseman. He was never going to move to shortstop. They said that as soon as they draft him. And again, you have Andrés moving to shortstop or you have an absolute pile jam at second base. They told you right off the rip what they wanted to do. I think everyone just necessarily didn't want to hear it. Andrés had been here, and you think just because a guy's on a six-year deal, whatever it was, that you want to keep him. And you think he's going to be here for the long term. It just wasn't the case. They tried to tell you. They told you everything they possibly could. Andrés will not be here. And then everyone wants to be shocked at the move. There should be nothing surprising coming out of that. I just think that's where you have to look. If you're the Guardians, you make that trade and you probably come out feeling better for it. There's a lot of pieces on this roster right now that you can look at who probably don't want to be, or they don't want them to be here long term, whose payments are coming up. You're not going to pay those guys. A guy like Josh Naylor, you're not going to pay. It's essentially players that we've become accustomed to having and have built a liking in Cleveland. I think a lot of people like Andrés for what he brings, but at the same time, it just like Josh Naylor, you're like a bottom of the line hitter. You can't hit 230. You can't hit 250 if you're Andrés without the power. Those are essentially like, you have those guys and you're ready to, all right, well, you got to keep him in the lineup. He's hitting well enough to do that. But this is exactly what you should expect out of the Guardians. You have guys waiting in the wings to come up. The deals, they might be there, but they probably shouldn't have been. It's always about the next guy up. They told you that right from the beginning. It's here, and it's going to be the people that they have waiting in the wings. Bazzano, Manzardo, all going to come up. I just don't understand everybody being so upset by the idea that Andrés Giménez was traded. You're living in your head. You're living in 2022 if you're upset with the idea that Giménez was traded. They gave him a contract early. It didn't pan out. Moved off of him. And for all intents and purposes, right, when I'm sitting there looking at it and I say, all right, you're getting Spencer Horwitz and Nick Mitchell, that might be the worst deal ever. And you're going to start Spencer Horwitz at second base? Doesn't seem like a good plan to me. But when you immediately flip that and you get Luis Ortiz and a couple of young pitching prospects, the optics of the deal change. You can now look at it, and the Guardians address the major problem that they had in front of them. At the deadline, we all wanted the Guardians to improve the starting pitching. Right? They made an ALCS, made me look like an idiot, just like Spencer said yesterday. I was saying a terrible move not to go get more starting pitching, and they took them all the way to the Yankees and took a game in the ALCS with what they had in front of them. Still to a degree was their downfall, but they moved on and looked okay with it. I think we would all look at this team and say the weakness still would be your starting rotation. So you shore that up and you move on from a guy that you don't see a real future with. I think fans should feel good about the trade. Now, in the immediate coming of what do you have next year, might be a different story. All right, like next year, does it help you out the most? Does it make you a genuinely better team in the right now? Probably not. It's like, at best, a lateral move. If you can find somebody to sort of sit at second base and be a consistent everyday starter, you probably get a lateral move.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
But you weren't just going to be able to keep walking away and not getting anything for Andrés Giménez, right? Like, if you go another year, you're not going to get the same return for Andrés. That's what it comes down to. You got rid of him early, got rid of him before the contract came on the books. The team might not be that great next year, but it's a move for years in the future. And I'm not going to sit around here and buy the fact that they were knocking on the door of a World Series. You slip past the Detroit Tigers in an ALDS. They took you to Game 5, and you essentially got waxed in the ALCS. It was proven to you right then and there, you were not good enough to go to a World Series. The Yankees have every advantage. Whenever it came down to the big moments, the Yankees had it. This team was not ready to be a World Series winner. They were not supposed to be in that spot in the first place. The team was supposed to win 500 games. Our expectations were exceeded. You can look back on last season and be incredibly happy about it and feel really good about the fact that they succeeded and they made the run that they did. But when you flip that around, the team didn't make any vast improvements. They went on a really good run in the earlier of the year and then coasted beyond that. Played pretty well down the stretch, but this wasn't a dominant performance from start to beginning. It was a really hot stretch that they then carried and allowed them to play slightly over 500 baseball for the rest of the year. This was not a team who was ready. I don't think you look at the Guardians next year and say, World Series contender, at least not the national media, they won't. They're going to 1,000% look back and probably put this team right back at 500 next year, maybe slightly above. You probably get a little bit of an advantage from where you were last year. You didn't do anything to make vast improvements. You didn't do anything to change the narrative around that. So, yes, the plan for the Guardians is still a couple years in the future, and that's what this deal means. I don't think you should be up in arms. And in fact, I think you should be happy. Is this not what we wanted them all to do? To go in and get starting pitching. 216-474-0092. You can also get to me on X at Vulnik Jake, V-U-L-I-N-E-C Jake. So you can get to our social media reactions powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. 9 o'clock, we'll do the classic segment at 9. Get a grip. 9:20, we'll talk to our Cleveland Sports beat reporter, Daryl Ryder, get his thoughts on what is advanced from the Giménez trade, since we talked to him yesterday as well. Everything going on with the Browns. Dustin Hopkins maybe out the door. Chiefs coming up on Sunday. We'll bring in Mackenzie Flume at 10:20. You got to pick one. But right now, guys, should you not be happy with it? Did you not want them to go get starting pitching? And that's exactly what they did. 216-474-0092. It's Jake Vulnik right here on Overtime on 92.3 The Fan. Jake Vulnik with you guys here on Overtime. The Andrés Giménez deal, I mean, come on. It wasn't really that bad. Right? Like, I think we should be feeling pretty good about the fact that you got Luis Ortiz into Cleveland. You got off the books of probably one of the worst contracts that you possibly could have gone to. I mean, all in all, I think you should feel pretty good about everything. You wanted starting pitching, you got starting pitching. That's the bottom line. Right, you had to go do something. I mean, you can't keep running back out. Tanner Bibee, Gavin Williams. Okay, like that's essentially all you have, by the way. Like, you look at the starting pitching and what you had last year. The guys that you're really confident in now that are coming back with no Alex Cobb, no Matthew Boyd. I mean, you're essentially looking at it and you're going, well, you got Tanner Bibee and you got Gavin Williams. Gavin couldn't even be trusted for a postseason start last year. Okay, that is the point we got to him. You had high hopes he would return and look great, did not. And that was far from the case. So you essentially have Tanner Bibee, maybe Shane Bieber at some point. But the Guardians essentially make a pseudo three-team deal, right? Like a one move then the other, but at the end of the day, it was basically just a three-team deal in order to get Luis Ortiz into Cleveland and get Andrés out. I get the outside and the instant optics that come with it, but he addressed a need, and I feel pretty good about it. 216-474-0092. Let's go out to the phones. Ed is in Erie. Ed, how you doing?
Hey, good. Hey, okay, so here's my here's what I'm wondering.
Yep.
Okay, I'm fine with the Menez, okay, getting traded, because they made it's just one more time they made a bad financial decision, right?
Right.
They signed Straw. Where's he, you know? And here's what
I'm
concerned
about. Yeah,
yeah, we don't have enough core players. You know, we have Ramirez at third. We got Kwan, okay, and who else? I mean, we're going to have to move both the Nailers out, you know, because they're not going to work out long term. But it concerns me that they continually make the wrong decisions on who they're going to sign longer term.
Yeah, I mean, you look at who's here now. I mean, I struggle to not agree with you. Like, there's not a whole lot you can look to and say, like, yeah, this is sort of the next guy up. I mean, Stephen Kwan, if you can afford him, right, if he doesn't essentially price out the Guardians going into what would be paying him and whether or not they value him high enough. Aside from that, like, there's not much here. You're basically banking on a lot of guys. It's what the Guardians do.
Right. So here's the thing. Let's say Manzardo is the guy at first.
Yeah.
Okay, let's hope he is. Let's hope the guy they drafted number one last year is the guy at second, right?
Yep.
They really have to be. They have to be, right? And then is it possible that Big Christmas could be the answer in right field?
I mean, there's an extent there. I think he was sort of up and down. He provides you with some really good moments. He sort of left me something wanting to a little bit more to be desired there, too. And, Ed, I appreciate the call. I just think, I mean, Ed brings up a good point. Like, you paid Andres, he wasn't there. And this comes back to the point of essentially, you're probably a little bit higher on the Guardians than the national media would be, and you probably should be. This team was projected to go 500 last year. It's not great, guys. Like, I think you got something really good with Stephen Vogt. You have a lot of promising things coming up that are a year or two away, probably need a little bit of development. And that's kind of where you are when you're Cleveland. It feels like that's where you always are. You're never going to be the team in the running for Juan Soto. The financials are just never going to be there. It, at the end of the day, it doesn't even matter probably who owns the team unless you're getting bought out by Warren Buffett. It does not matter. David Blitzer is not going to come in and essentially pay an extra $400 million onto your salary. It's not going to happen. When you're the Guardians, this is sort of the situation that you're in. You have to play a little bit of money ball. They tried to make a deal and say, all right, we're willing to spend a little bit more. I think a lot of people were happy just to see a $100 million contract get handed out. Because it was like, all right, you realize you might have something here. You're willing to pay it. They couldn't be Andrés Giménez. It was a bad decision, and you found a way out of it. One that helps you in the right now. I think when you went into the year, you probably looked at this Guardians team and said, your struggles appear to be obvious. This team is going to do what they did last year, and they're not going to be able to hit the ball. Right? You can always sort of fall back on pitching, and we had high hopes going into the year of, okay, Shane Bieber, can he get back to form? Tanner Bibee, Gavin Williams, good young upcomers. Tristan McKenzie, you were sort of maybe on the fence about, but you had hopes for. That sort of all crashed and burned in your face, and your problems went completely 180. The team could hit the baseball. He wasn't the most consistent thing in the world, but the Guardians last year hit the baseball. There were times where they were keeping up with the top teams in the league when it came to extra base hits, power, and the advanced analytics when it came to it. Sure, it fell off a little bit, but that was not the issue with this team. They showed you they're able to string it together on offense. But then you look at the pitching, and it was this unique scenario that in just being in Cleveland over the last decade or so, you hadn't been used to. The pitching had always seemed to work its way out. They had been masterminds when it came to developing prospects into starting level pitching who you were essentially just bringing up the next Cy Young. When you transition from Corey Kluber to Shane Bieber and you're like, well, Tanner Bibee could very well be on his way there. You felt good about it. And it just couldn't be the case. There was nothing you could do with this team going into next year and say, well, I feel pretty good about what they can do with the pitching staff. There's no way. Everything that you thought you had essentially blew up in your face. And I'm not going to sit here and talk prospects with you, but like the Guardians were ravaged when it came to starting pitching prospects. They had almost none. They told you that in the draft when they went ahead and drafted like eight straight and all but like three or four of their picks ended up being pitching. And they tell you it right now. We'll go get Luis Ortiz. He'll probably be a two or a three. And we'll bring up a couple of guys in the wings. We'll add a couple more guys that could maybe at some point in the next couple of years, I don't know, save you money. Hopefully be the next thing. If not that, I mean, you're at least getting a shot at it. You're getting a couple more guys in there. But you wanted the Guardians to address starting pitching, and they addressed it. Luis Ortiz is a good starting pitcher. I mean, young, 25, you have multiple years of control. Right? He hasn't even started arbitration yet. He's a guy that can hit triple digits. I mean, I don't know what else you want. He had a sub 3.5 ERA last year. Going from reliever to starter, he managed to take his ERA below a 3.5. That's something you feel good about. That's a guy who's going to step in and make an immediate impact where the Guardians needed it most. I think you looked at this team defensively, which is what Andre Jimenez provided you, and said, this team's really good defensively. You have some very, very strong fielders. Taking away a second baseman is not going to all of a sudden turn that around. Brian Rocchio, the offense came alive in the postseason and the defense sort of slumped, but yeah, he was a Gold Glove finalist at shortstop. Stephen Kwan, a Gold Glover in left field. You have several other positions. I can keep rattling them off. Like Bo Naylor was good behind the plate. Lane Thomas isn't bad in center, although he might get traded. Like you had a good defense. You want to add to the starting pitching, and you need a guy that you're going to pay long-term to hit the baseball. You got rid of a guy who was long-term never going to be able to hit the ball. You were grasping at a guy hitting 250 the last 2 years and living in 2022 thinking he could get back up to 300. And you added a starting pitcher who, again, makes an immediate impact next year in the rotation, answers one of the question marks, which is essentially 2 through 5 right now. You can take one of those away. But next year, you're basically just banking on a miracle run again, right? If you think the Guardians were right there, it's unfortunately a newsflash. Like, I want the Guardians to be right there. I think the success can continue, but you shouldn't expect it to continue. It's a year or two away. Again, 216-474-0092, Tom's in Menor. Tom?
Yeah, I think, Gutierrez had a pretty good tenure here in Cleveland, I think. You know, other than the last year or two, his batting average has definitely gone down. But his glove was really good. I mean,
yeah,
he was probably one of the best second basemen we've had in decades. Even better than, I think, Roberto Alomar. I really do. I mean, he's won us some games. But the Guardians went ahead and made a bold move with a lot of money left on his contract. He was definitely overpaid. And they got a ton of young talent in the farm system that can play second base. So, I mean, it didn't surprise me. Like, everyone's like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe, you know, that they did this, whatever. It didn't surprise me at all. I mean, I think if he could at least hit 20 home runs and had his batting average up around 270, 280, he'd be here for the remainder of his contract. But yep, he didn't, and that's why they drafted
Travis, I can't remember Bizana, that guy's name, yeah, but
yeah, that's why they drafted him. You got in this league, you got to hit. You got to hit. And him and Naylor did not hit in the postseason. And I'm telling you, Naylor's next. He's going because they're not going to be able to pay him, number one. And number two, I mean, the guy put on, about 30 pounds in the second half of the season? I mean, he looked terrible in the playoffs. I mean, terrible.
Bad. Yeah.
So we just got to – listen, everybody's like, oh, the Guardians. I like the fact that they're making deals. You know what I mean? At least we're doing something. You know, I mean, a lot of teams sit on their hands and wait till stuff happens. we're being proactive. I really do like this deal. I think it was a good one.
Thanks, Tom. I mean, listen, we're on the same page, and I think that's a complaint about the guard. It's like, you're mad that they move off of Andres Jimenez, but were you not mad last year when the big ads were bringing back Austin Hedges in Scott Barlow? Right? You bring in Scott Barlow and he's gone like by halfway through the year, maybe a little bit past that. But like, he was essentially supposed to be your setup pitcher. He was supposed to be the guy that came in the eighth inning. He didn't last very long. That was the big move you got last year. They move off Andres Jimenez, they bring in a starting pitcher, and everyone's up in arms again. I think it's, again, just a reason to react. Like, yes, there should be a reaction. You traded away a guy that you're supposed to pay $100 million to. I don't think it necessarily has to be this big blow-up negative reaction. And maybe, I mean, by your guys' reactions tonight, maybe that has changed. Maybe the initial reaction to it has died down and not everybody's as upset now. Or maybe you've grown tired with it already. Maybe you're already sick of and just completely done with the Guardians offseason. I do think, though, Josh Naylor could very well be on the move. Don't think you're wrong there. Lane Thomas, maybe so. Guardians, I don't think, are done this offseason. And whether or not you'll like it, we'll see. Because I guarantee you're not going to get anything massive back for Josh Naylor. You're probably looking at prospects again. All right, 216-474-0092. Daryl Ryder's coming up at 920. And I always tell you guys I don't like to rub things in your face when I'm right. We're going to do it again. Your reaction to Jameis Winston has said it all. We'll do it when we come back. It's Jake Volnick right here on The Fan. Jake Volnick with you guys here on The Fan. Just got done wrapping up the Andres Jimenez conversation. Closing off, though, rclark333 on X, where you can get to me, at Volnick Jake, V-U-L-I-N-E-C Jake, chiming in saying, how could Rocchio possibly have been a Gold Glove finalist? Every game I watched, he made a stupid blunder, either a dropped pop-up, I think we're referring specifically to a singular dropped pop-up in that instance, but or throwing the ball into the stands, kicking a grounder, etc. And I watched about 50 of their games at least. I have a good friend who, like, we go to Guardians games together all the time, and we're constantly talking about them in season, out of season, whatever it is. He had, like, the same take. He's like, how is this guy a Gold Glove finalist? Like, that shouldn't be... That's not how this should go down. Every time he watches him, it's an error. He's making some awful mistake. Like, I don't know. I feel like when I watched Brian Rocchio, it's pretty good. Things weren't that bad. I thought overall he did pretty well. Like, he clearly got to be a Gold Glove finalist for a reason. I mean, the fielding percentage had to be pretty good. I don't know. I mean, I agree there are mistakes, but overall, I thought it was a pretty good season, especially defensively from Rocchio. But I can see you're clearly not alone in that thought of thinking, R. Clark. No, definitely not. But I feel like too many times I've said I don't like to rub it in, but I'm going to have to do it here. And we're going to have to go back to the well one more time. I really don't. I don't enjoy like being like, well, I was right here, but the idea of Jameis Winston, and I tried to lay it out, and it just seemed like everybody was so gung-ho, like, yeah, he's the bridge quarterback. Look what you've seen out of him. He's entertaining. He can win football games, even though he really hasn't won football games, but he can win football games. Throws a lot of touchdowns. He's exciting to watch. I think we all just sort of missed the ball. I think that's what everybody was convincing themselves that they believed. But as soon as he got the Jameis bad game, the conversation went elsewhere. It went complete sideways to, all right, well, what else do we got? What are the other options? It's exactly what you got in Pittsburgh, right? You got a game where Jameis didn't look his best. It didn't look like he was going up against the Broncos anymore. The passing game did not settle in the way that you wanted it to. It did not have the same effectiveness. It was not as explosive. He was missing a lot more of his throws. Guys were not necessarily wide open. He threw a couple to the sideline. Whatever. But, like, I thought it would be a three-interception game that essentially did it. But you go into Pittsburgh, and I think it was just the idea that the offense was slow, and you sort of, at least in your head, got baited into the idea that Jameis Winston in the Browns' offense is just going to be a unit that scores 40 points every game or 30 points every game. You essentially went from Deshaun not being able to score 20 and you took it. You took it and you ran with it. But I said, I think everybody is sort of sitting on the fence, one leg on either side. And when Jameis does good, it's, well, there's your bridge quarterback. And when Jameis doesn't do so hot, it's, well, what are my other options? And that's exactly what we've gotten into. It's exactly where this has gone. DTR is now a focal point conversation in Cleveland. I mean, what are we doing? Like, we are going from, all right, Jameis gives you your best shot to, should they play DTR? You just had to accept Jameis for what he was. If you want Jameis to be the bridge quarterback, you know exactly what you're getting. Right? And it's not that reason I would tell you to go watch DTR for the last four games, because I don't think that's the truth either. But like, you knew what you had. You knew some games it was going to look like it did against Denver on Monday. And you knew some it was going to be the following week on Sunday when you played Pittsburgh. Right? Like, you get the no-risky Jameis. That's essentially what you go for. And then when it doesn't look good, you want to flip it back. So maybe is not the clear answer. Like, no, you know what you have. If you want Jameis as a bridge quarterback, you're okay with your offense being up and down. A complete roller coaster ride. So I want to just toss away the idea that everyone's going into saying, essentially just riding the fence. Like I said, you're there or you're not. You got to pick a side now. Yeah, you either have to be for Jameis or you need to be gung-ho calling for DTR, and you can't go back to the other side once you're there. You're either okay with the Browns going into next year not knowing what you're getting on offense game in and game out. I mean, in terms of is it going to be a good day or a bad day? You know it's going to be a complete mix throughout the season. You have that consistency in front of you. But you need to be okay either with that or saying, that's not going to cut it next year. We need to go find something else. I've told you guys 100 times, I don't think it's going to be Jameis. I don't think it should be Jameis. Maybe it will be, but I don't think it should be. He gets you to 7 or 8 wins. Congratulations. It's not where you want to be. But if that's what you want, if you're okay with that, step on over to the left side of the fence. I want Jameis Winston. I'm okay when the offense comes out and throws out duds and they score 14 points. I'm okay with the idea that they might score 32 and Jameis might throw 3 picks on his way to doing it. That's perfectly fine. I can live with you being there. I can't live with you going back and forth. I can't live with you if you're the person who is saying, I want Jameis to be the bridge quarterback, and then you woke up on Monday morning and said, well, maybe they should go to DTR. If you want Jameis as the bridge, I think the main thing is you would start him for the rest of the year, right? There would be no question about, I need to see Dorian Thompson-Robinson. That wouldn't even be in the cards, because if you want him to start next year, you're perfectly okay with him starting the rest of this year. You don't need to find out what you have with DTR. Because that ship has sailed if you're going to Jameis Winston. There's nothing to find out there. He drafted a quarterback in the 5th round. He's shown you a couple of times of what he has, and that's that. You have Jameis Winston in the wings. If you want to be competitive, that's where you go. The idea that you don't have enough time to evaluate DTR, I think is complete bogus. Completely out the window. Like, you've had the time. You've had exactly what you needed. Like, DTR is, I don't know, he's just not going to give you anything. And if he was, if you go to him, you're sacrificing the idea that Jameis Winston is your quarterback next year. So again, you can think one way or the other. I won't tell you you're wrong for going to one side of the fence or the other. But like, you've had to see both. You've gotten to see Jameis. You've gotten to see DTR. I just don't get it. Ken and Anthony this morning. When it comes to starting DTR, and not necessarily that it's the right decision, but they don't think they've seen enough.
We have a very, very small sample size.
Uh-huh.
And yet I have other hosts, beat reporters, and fans in unison all telling me that we know what DTR is. And my question is, how? How could you possibly know? And how could the Browns know? I don't want people to mistake this. I'm assuming DTR is probably not that good.
I understand.
I didn't love the pick when they took him. What I am now asking is, how could you possibly know? He's played so little football. And in those cases where he's played, it has been a last-minute thing almost every time.
You want to know how I know what you have with Dorian Thompson-Robinson? Because you drafted the kid in the fifth round. Okay, like, Cleveland loves to latch onto this fact that DTR can be a great quarterback. And I don't want to just rule the kid out, because I think he has sort of gotten the short end of the stick when it comes to the starts that he has made. He's essentially gotten a week to prepare. Or a week would be very generous. He's gotten like a day to prepare. That's just, like, when you draft a guy in the fifth round, most teams don't latch onto their fifth round quarterbacks that hard. Most of the time, your fifth round quarterback, like, he might be your backup for a year or two, and then he usually just sort of putters out. You've gotten a couple of weeks with DTR, though, where he has been the starter. Now, again, the offense didn't look good, but you did sort of go back and forth. I thought he looked like he improved towards the end of that before you went out and got Joe Flacco after he got hurt. I thought you started to look better, but at the end of the day, DTR was drafted for one reason, and one reason only. He was supposed to be the emergency, what if something goes wrong with Deshaun? Right, you drafted a quarterback who plays a similar style, who can, you wanted to sort of slip back in to the same offense that you were trying to run with Deshaun. You have a quarterback who you thought could have sort of big play potential, could move around with his feet, make plays with his legs. Well, it didn't work very well with Deshaun, so now you go back to the well with DTR. No, like, when you move on from one, you should be pretty comfortable moving on from the other. We talk prototypical quarterback with Kevin Stefanski. That's not the type of guy. It's not a knock to DTR, it's just not. He's not the guy. I don't love going back to Jameis, but that's not your answer either. Like, you need to either evaluate DTR or evaluate Jameis. I think you know sort of what you have with both. You have a guy who's not going to win you a lot of games in DTR and a guy who's not going to win you enough games with Jameis Winston, and he's going to look mildly exciting doing it. It's the idea, essentially, that everybody just wants to go to something that could be exciting. Why not look at a change? You're 3-10. Go look at something else. It's not necessarily the answer. If Jameis is the answer, he stays. If you go to DTR, you're telling me you're trying to get a quarterback next year. You can give him a legitimate chance if you want to give him 3 weeks after Kansas City. And just to say you gave him a fair shake, okay. But I can tell you right now, just like Lima said, like, the assumption is that he's probably not going to be good, and that's what you're going to learn. But the minute you sit down Jameis for the last three games, you're telling him, hey, you're probably not coming back here next year. Why does he want to be somewhere where they're evaluating that he's not good enough? He's put good stuff on tape. Put some bad stuff on tape, but he put enough good stuff on tape to probably get looks elsewhere. If you're not going to trust him down the last three games of your season and dying matters, why would you trust him going into next year? It just makes no sense. You can't live on both sides of the fence. Pick one and stick it. 216-474-0092. When we come back, get a grip. We'll talk to Daryl Ryder, our Browns beat reporter, coming up at 9:20 as well. It's Jake Volnick right here on Overtime. On 92.3 The Fan.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.